100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day of a 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, it's Digital Sista, and I'm back. And we're just fresh and into the new year. Thanks to all my listeners and for helping the podcast continuing to grow. It is really just popping out of this world, and I thank you so much for that. It's very exciting to see that happen. And this is my 48th podcast, so two more, and I will have done 50, which is pretty exciting. But let me begin with the Subway hero. His name was Wesley Autry. And you'll remember this, it happened about a week or so ago when there was a young man who had some type of medical problem, and he had a seizure of some sort, but he fell into one of the columns on the subway station. But because it's kind of smooth and round, he kind of slid off of the column and fell down onto and into the subway tracks. Now, I used to live in New York City for many, many years, and the subway tracks, you know, are very dangerous. And if he happened to fall on that a center rail, that's the one where you fry like bacon, you know. You don't even have a chance on that center rail. But in any event, here was this guy, Wesley Autry, on the subway platform with his two young daughters. He's a former Vietnam War veteran, construction worker, and he sees this happening. And, you know, it was just a quick thought on his part that he didn't even hesitate. He jumped right in to save this guy. And his poor daughters were just horrified because as he did this, you know, there was an oncoming train. I'm sure everybody was holding their breath in that subway station because it must have been just the most horrific, scary experience to possibly witness. And here is oncoming train. Wesley is trying to make decisions very quickly. He was trying to get the gentleman up, but he realized he really didn't have time because by that time the conductor on the train, of course, is blowing the horn. He's slamming the brakes and screeching the brakes. I think even two trains passed over him. So he realized he couldn't get him up, so he just pulled him down into kind of like a trough that's on the side and, you know, held him tight and covered him. And it was such a close call because the train grazed Mr. Autry's hat, and you could see, you know, the black mark where the train grazed his head. And, you know, once the train passed and, you know, everything was okay, and they were both, thank God, alive, he yells up, "Tell my daughters I'm okay." And, you know, I'm sure that was just a godsend for them. But, I mean, just a selfless, wonderful act. And I'm going to take it a step further and take this a little deeper, because I think that this was an example from God. And I say that I'm a believer, but I'm not, you know, an overly fanatic person that I very much believe. But I really feel that this was something that came from God. And you remember, the situation in New York City for the last couple of weeks had been pretty tense because of the recent shooting of Sean Bell, you know, the guy who was killed on the same day that he was to become a groom. And then there were other situations and shootings in Atlanta and New Orleans, and you know, the country was just heavy with this issue of brutality and police shooting, you know, black men as if they are all criminals. Okay, so I think that this was a prime example to wake everyone up, to let people know that all black men are not criminals, and that there are some wonderful men out there who do some very selfless things. And I think it was something that woke people up to say, hey, maybe we ought to, you know, think twice, you know, when we see an African-American man. You know, we don't always have to fear them. Because that could be the man that saves your life, just like this man did for that young man who was, I believe, Caucasian. Yes, he didn't think twice about the color. He just saw someone in distress falling into a dangerous situation onto the platform, and he didn't hesitate. He jumped in and did something. And you know, the reality of it was him. Nobody else on that platform did that, okay? And I think, and rightly so, that he was given all kinds of accolades and called a hero. He was on all kinds of TV shows, and Donald Trump gave him $10,000, and on and on and on. I think it's absolutely, absolutely wonderful. And I think, again, like I said just a few moments ago, I think it's a wake-up call to our nation and people in the city of New York, where sometimes racial tensions are just a little bit too out of control, that it's time to take a moment and give another look at a population that you're so quick to brush off, discount, treat with disrespect, and just, you know, the negative things that come with being an African-American male in this society. And I think it was a wake-up call. And I'm hoping that it just doesn't happen with that situation, with an extraordinary situation like that. I'm really hoping that people will begin to look a little bit more carefully, and that they will have empathy. And I've said that word so many times in many of my podcasts. We need more empathy. We need to work together. We need to stop fearing other people so much just because of their skin color. Okay, so I was just so excited that he was given all of the awards and accolades that he was given, because it is rightly justified. And we're just so thankful that he, Wesley Autry, was okay, that no harm came to him and to the young man who fell onto the tracks, and to Wesley's young daughters who got their father back after he risked his life to save someone else. So kudos, kudos, kudos to Wesley Autry. He is truly, truly a great hero. I have to say thank you, Anderson Cooper, because he had an hour-long special about Oprah's new school. It's called the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls, which is located in Henley-on-Klip, just a little bit outside of, I believe it's outside of Johannesburg. And it's a $40 million facility. It will house 152 students from some very difficult backgrounds. And I just think it was wonderful that he devoted an entire hour, a special hour-long program last night on CNN, to show the world Oprah's school and what she's doing and why she's doing it. It was just beautiful to see the campus. It was beautiful to see their dormitories and just beautiful to see that the setting in which it was in. It's just absolutely beautiful. And I was so glad that he devoted an hour to this because, as you know, Oprah's been getting flack from people in the United States for her effort to build this school in Africa. And it's interesting that Oprah said she, you know, has visited many, many schools in the United States, and she just really got tired of going to the schools and just writing the checks. Because why? The kids, from her point of view and where she's seen them, don't seem to want to learn. They want all of the consumer goods, you know, the iPods, the, you know, latest sneakers or whatever. But they didn't seem to want to learn in the way that she wanted to express that for them. And she said the difference is that the children in South Africa They didn't ask for those consumer goods. What they asked for were uniforms to go to school. And that says something right there, that their priority and their desire is to go to school and to be educated. And so this is where she's putting her energy. And I say, you know, that's okay. It's her money. She's going where it's really needed. She's going where it is appreciated. And I'm sure that that won't be the only school that she builds in Africa. And one of the other points I thought was interesting is, as she was working with the architects and the designers and everybody to put this beautiful, beautiful facility together, she said many of the people were saying to her, well, why are you doing this? It's too nice for, quote, them. You know, these girls just came from living in huts or living in, you know, very rural villages. And Oprah's response was, well, why not? Why can't they have beautiful things? Why can't they be shown that they are valuable, that they are beautiful, and that they can be in a beautiful setting that was created for them? And I just really applaud her for that, because that is very often what happens. People think that because they are people of color that they don't deserve things quite as nice as, quote, the majority. And I'm so glad that she went all out to create something very beautiful for them, because for many of them, as she told some of the stories of their histories and from the families of which some of them come from, some of them, you know, are raising their own children, because that's a big issue there in South Africa because of the AIDS pandemic, that many of the parents are gone. So you have children who are head of the household raising their siblings or perhaps even other children in their village. And so these are some of the young ladies that she selected to be part of the school. And she believes very fundamentally, I'm talking about Oprah, that if you can change the lives of these young girls, give them the education, make them feel that they are valued, that she's absolutely right. This is the future. These are the young ladies who are going to change the direction of what's going on in their country, and they are going to change the lives of other young people or just other Africans within their area. So I just thought, this is such a wonderful thing, and I'm so glad that Anderson showed us the school and spent the whole hour just really sharing with us why Oprah did this and just the beauty of it. It's just absolutely, absolutely wonderful. And as I said in some of my previous podcasts, as I prepare to go on my first trip to Africa, I'm going to be going to Ghana, leaving February 1st, and I'll be going for 2 weeks. As I read and as I saw, you know, what Anderson was showing us on his show, my trip to Africa, I think, will become even more meaningful, because I'm going with a group of 10 people, and one of them is my dear friend Yvonne Poynter, and we're going there with a sense of helping. And Yvonne knows a young man named Anthony from Ghana, who has done some wonderful things in the name of Yvonne's daughter, who was brutally raped and killed some 20 years ago. And, you know, we're going there with almost the same purpose that Oprah has, to go and to help bring, we're going to bring some supplies, you know, pencils, paper, things like that, that it's difficult for those students to get their hands on, because they have to pay to go to school. And, you know, for many of them, money is hard to come by, and they just really can't afford some of the things that we take for granted here. So I am going there with even more purpose and even with more meaning, as I watched Anderson show us the great thing that Oprah did. So I'll be packing some extra pencils and pads and things like that that I can give to the students when I touch ground in Ghana, and feel that I'm doing, you know, just a small part to change someone's life who really, really, really would appreciate it. And I just think it's great. And I also think it's great that finally, finally, the news media is picking up on the stories of Africa. And it's been gradual, but now I think you see it. And I'm loving the fact that stories from Africa, be they positive, be they negative, they are now coming through on the major media, especially CNN. It's taken a long time, but I just think it's great that now Africa, the continent of Africa, is being included in the major news media. So when you're watching CNN in the evening now, pretty much there's always a story about something in Africa, and I think that's wonderful, and I think that's hopefully the beginning of more communication and more media awareness of what's going on in Africa. Not just the AIDS pandemic, but there are a lot of great things going on that we should know about. It's not just gloom and doom. That's part of it, but it's not just all gloom and doom. So I think it's really great that finally Africa, so to speak, is coming onto the media map, and I am really, really thankful for that. And as I said, it just gives my trip as I prepare to go there even more meaning. You know, I picked up my malaria pills this morning, so I just have a few more things to get, and then I'm pretty much ready to go. And just have a wonderful experience, of course, which I will tell you all about when I return from there. So I just think Oprah's doing a wonderful thing. And as she said, she did it herself. And she has sent a challenge out to other people who have the means and the celebrity to do something with it, to do something that will be lasting. And I wonder with, you know, her friends, her celebrity friends that came with her, because one of the stipulations was that they pay their airfare, but she would take care of everything else. I wonder how many of them, because, you know, they're making some big bucks as directors and actors and things like that, but I wonder how many of them will take that experience of going there and will actually do something with it. I mean, not just a little, you know, donation that, you know, would mean nothing to them based on the fact that some of them are getting $20 million per picture, but that they will do something meaningful. And I wonder how many of them, you know, did something meaningful in terms of a donation to her, or were they just there, you know, for the media spotlight. So I think she's thrown out the gauntlet, Oprah has, and challenged people who have the wealth, who have the means to do something. And she said, you know, one person can do a great thing. She didn't tap into sponsors to do this. She did this herself. And I'm hoping that more people will follow suit, that they will not criticize her for doing the good things that she does, but that they too will step up to the plate. And she's absolutely right. We can make such a difference if we change some of our priorities and just take a little step at a time. A lot of these problems in the world could be solved if we put our mind to it and decided that they should be solved. And, you know, that's where I'll leave it right now. But I think it's just a wonderful thing that she did. And, again, thank you, Anderson, for giving her an hour to talk about what she's doing and why she's doing it, and the fact that she doesn't care about the naysayers. I think it's great. Now, check this out. Isn't this something like Jay-Z? He is all over the map with all these entrepreneurial things. Now, it seems that Jay-Z and General Motors have teamed up to bring a stylish color to a rugged sport utility vehicle, SUV. And it's the concept GMC Yukon Denali. And it's painted Jay-Z Blue, and it was developed through a partnership with Jay-Z for the last 2 years, and he's worked with the company's Global Color Studio to create this kind of reflective, very cool, kind of an icy blue color. And I just think it's like out of this world. He is just being tapped to do a lot of very interesting things. And it'll be interesting to see if other rappers will be accorded that, or is it just for a few who have turned out to be some really great moguls? But it's just absolutely great. And so what they did was during this show that they had celebrities as if they were on the runway, you know, like at Victoria's Secret or any of the big fashion runway shows, but they had celebrities kind of walk out and kind of escort the car to the audience. One of them was Rosie Perez, who helped model the gold Pontiac Solstice Club Sport. She talked about how her first car was a Datsun B210. You remember those? They were real hot back in the day. And she had a friend who had a big crack problem. So the person said, "I need the money." So Rosie said, "I'll buy your car for $150. So that's how she got her first car. But apparently she's doing much better now because she drives a Volvo and a Range Rover. But I thought, how interesting that they would pair celebrities with the car and have them, you know, take the catwalk as if they were in a fashion show. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. And this new trend, have you seen it? It's called Ghost Ride the Whip. I mean, it just is so, it's just so scary to me. But it seems to be a very big pastime with some of the hip-hop crowd, you know, the hyphy crowd out in San Francisco. But it's really, you know, it's really kind of dangerous. But I'm surprised that people are doing this. But what it is that you you know, you get in the car and the driver exits the car and dances around the car or dances on the hood, whatever, as it slowly moves down the street. So you're having people dance around on a vehicle that's moving. Okay, so there really isn't a margin for error. And what has happened is in early December, two people were killed doing this. One had their head slammed as the car was rolling by some parked cars, and another one was dancing on top of a moving car and fell off, hit his head, and died in one of Canada's first ghost riding fatalities. It's just like incredibly dangerous, you know, but I guess, you know, fads are fads. But, you know, they were kind of doing that, not to that degree, back in the 50s. Remember the movie Rebel Without a Cause with Natalie Wood, Sal Mineo, and James Dean, and how, you know, they would meet at night at this dirt strip and they would do, you know, kind of a form of that. You know, you gun the car and you drive really, really fast, and you get to the edge, you get as close to the edge of a cliff as possible before you bail out. Okay, so, you know, this kind of stuff has been going on, you know, as long as there have been hot, you know, cars and racing strips. But I think they've taken it to another level with this ghost ride. I think it's very very dangerous. So, you know, I'm hoping that it doesn't catch on a whole lot and we lose a lot of people. But it is a trend that, you know, you'll want to become aware of. And if you see, you know, people that you know, or if you happen to witness it, you know, maybe tell them to do something else, something a little bit safer that's just not going to cause such great risk of injury. And let's face it, if not only death, but what if you fall and hit your head and become, you know, basically brain dead? I mean, and you're going to be a vegetable because of this. So, you know, it's a very dangerous thing, but it seems to be a hot trend that I hope doesn't catch on too much so that we don't lose too many people doing that. Now, what's up with Barack? You know, he's put all that information in a book. I think, you know, Personally, nobody at the time when they're in their fifth, when they're 15 or 20 or whatever, I don't think most people think, oh, I'm going to run for president one day, so I better not do whatever I'm doing. I mean, who hasn't done some stuff? We all have skeletons in our closet. I think it is refreshing that he put it out there himself in his book, so it's not something that they have to, dredge up. As he considers a run for the presidency. But and I wonder how that's going to play into things, because if he's interested in running and Hillary Clinton is interested in running, I wonder, will they work together as a team, or as and make that the ticket, or will they run, excuse me, separately, and that may cause a split in some votes. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And if you remember, a few months ago, President Clinton had, I think they asked him about Obama, Barack, and all that, and one of his comments was he has to be careful that he doesn't peak too early. And so it'll be very interesting to see if this potential candidacy causes a split within the Democratic Party. And I personally hope that whatever they decide, that it will not split the party, because the way things are lining up, there seems to be at least, three to five potential people who are considering a run for the White House on the Democratic side, and then there's a growing list on the Republican side. So I just think it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out, because he obviously is the rising star in the party. He doesn't quite have the baggage that Hillary has. And yet, she may have thought that she would be the leader per se, the one that they would look to. And then here is Barack coming up very closely on her coattail, so to speak. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And it'll be interesting to see if his confession in the book that he smoked pot and, tried cocaine, if that's going to really affect him in a negative way. Or, as I said before, will people just say, hey, we all have dirt. If you dig deep enough, you can find it. Or will they find his candor refreshing? So it remains to be seen. But let's keep in mind that we've had a lot of people as presidents with issues, and they got in and they did their job, so we can't expect everybody to be absolutely perfect, because wouldn't they be boring? I wouldn't want that. I want somebody who's had some life, who has experienced some things, who's not afraid to live. I mean, let's look at Clinton. I love the fact that he was doing some of the stuff he was doing, because he was obviously getting it, and he was a vital, sexy man. I mean, I don't think it's appropriate in all the ways that he did it, but I think people were just upset because he was a vital man, doing his thing, and he was getting it like really regularly. So, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and if in fact it will cause a problem for him. I really hope it doesn't. I hope that they can, give him a shot, because I think he is a new voice, and I think that's what people are clamoring for. They're clamoring for a new voice. They're clamoring for a new person. They're clamoring for what the future can be. And as he said, people are clamoring for the audacity of hope, that we can look for some new things and look for some new types of leaders with new energies, and so we can move forward as a country and not end up being a third world country ourselves in less than, 50 years or so. So it's something to watch and something to take notice of. Interestingly, that Bill Gates at the recent convention, technology convention, is they're on a theme now. They're talking about how things are becoming more and more connected. And one of the new things that they're going to be rolling out is with Ford Motor demonstrated something called SYNC, SYNC, S-Y-N-C, which is a voice-activated technology that they developed with Microsoft. And when it becomes available this year, get this, drivers are going to be able to perform hands-free phone dialing, so you'll be able to, you know, dial without, you know, taking your attention from the road and hitting a tree. And they'll be able to get incoming text messages through the audio system of the car, and they will also be able to control digital music players using voice commands or controls on the steering wheel. I mean, I think that's going to be pretty cool, but I do wonder, with all the little gadgets and things going on, is that going to take people's attention off the road and cause problems? But, you know, they've got video screens in cars and everything else, so I guess, you know, it's going to be. But it's just very interesting that we're getting more connected. We're getting more, I think, isolated in some ways. That not only is your home becoming a focal point with all these entertainment systems, but now you'd be stepping out of your home into your car, which then becomes your mobile entertainment system. So that's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. There's all kinds of interesting things going on. I think they already have a car that can voice activate, you know, it can park itself. So, I mean, you know, cars may not even be cars as we know them at some point. They'll probably be like, remember the cartoon, The Jetsons, where they just, like hovercraft, they just kind of float up and, choo, you know, sail off. So I think we're moving in a very interesting direction. And again, I wonder, as they add more of these gadgets to the cars, you know, cars too are going to also become even more expensive. So that's going to be interesting to see. Is that something that's just going to be in the high-end luxury cars, or is this a technology that will eventually filter in to all of the cars? But, you know, can't stop technology. Got to be part of it or be behind. You know, what's up with the war? You know, I don't get it. We've lost over 3,000 people. Clearly, it's not working. The support from the public is waning. And yet, you know, our commander-in-chief seems to be buckling down to do what he wants to do. He's going to call for a deployment of some 20,000 more troops. I mean, they're already struggling finding officers and soldiers to fight this. So I don't know, you know, I don't know, you know, what's going to happen or how long this is going to go on, or is he going to continue to get a blank check? It's not a good thing. It's really just not a good thing. And it just doesn't seem to be any reason why that they can't slowly phase, you know, coming out of there. But you know why they can't, because you invaded a country that didn't do anything to you. And you've plunged the country into civil war. They want to call it sectarian violence. It's civil war because they're killing each other. Okay? And so, no, it would look horrible to do that and then just to up and leave. But you've got to figure out a strategy to at least do it over time. Gradually, you know, maybe some of the goals and objectives should be modified based on the objective that, you know, you're going to be getting some of the troops out, you know, maybe starting sometime this year. But, you know, I don't know if that's happening, you know. It seems like there's a tunnel vision and that's it. And I think it's pretty scary. And I think that the opinion of the American people, I hate that term American people, because the politicians throw that around as if they're doing everything for the American people, because they're not. They're doing it for themselves. But anyway, I digress. But, you know, I just wonder, you know, how this is going to play out. I mean, will you get people who are going to reenlist? I mean, you're sending older soldiers back for 2 and 3 tours of duty. You're calling up people who have retired. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's just, it's not something that's good. And I don't think there's an easy answer for it, too, but I think people want to see a more definitive approach to slowly, slowly bringing our soldiers home and to gradually phase it out. I think that's what people want. Now, whether or not they're being heard by the White House is a different story. But I think that's what people want. People see that it's not going well. There doesn't seem to be a strategy. And people, I think, are just tired of losing their friends and loved ones for a situation that really... really is kind of murky and was kind of murky from the very beginning. But in any event, I don't want to beat a dead horse with that issue. I'm just going to end right now. And again, I'm going to thank you all for tuning in. I really appreciate how everything's really popping for Digital Sister. And keep passing it around. I'm going to be back with you in a few days. Digital Sister signing out.
I'm a soul, I'm gonna roll. See, I'm gonna roll.